box, office, refund, box office refund podcast.
Welcome to Box Office Refund, a weekly podcast where we review low-rated movies and ask the question, were the critics too harsh or were they spot on? I am your host, Nico Bell, and with me today is my co-host, Ward.
Ward, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Apparently I'm a bit forgetful, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Yeah, you just totally messed up the whole podcast scheduling, but that's okay. That's fine.
Well, it's fun to know I have that power.
Yeah. I mean, we were going to do a double recording tonight, and then we would be done. But I guess, because you didn't watch the movie, we'll have to come back and record again.
Well, I guess I just assumed that since next week is not really a holiday week, that we wouldn't be taking that
next
week off.
We are recording this, guys, on the 12th. And next week is the 19th, and that is close enough to Thanksgiving that I count it as a holiday. So therefore, I didn't think we were going to be it. But that's okay. Whatever. Just ruin it.
Because this is a B-side episode.
This is a B-side episode. Okay, so I actually did a fair amount of watching movies and TV shows this week. So maybe we can go back and forth this time. Try to spice it up.
All right. Well, are we not going to talk about what's up for next week? I mean, people want to know so they can watch and listen to us.
I'm just jumping all over the place
there
today.
In the moment.
So next week, we're watching The Holiday Calendar on Netflix. And this is beginning our Christmas season. We'll be watching multiple Christmas movies, which makes me so happy because it's my favorite time of year. I'm very pumped.
What's The Holiday Calendar about? Is that about it's an advent calendar run amok that starts murdering people? Is that correct? Or did I mix that
up? So close. It's a magical advent calendar that kind of predicts the future.
Is it like time travel? Because I like time travel. That might make it bearable.
It's not time travel. She just opens up one of the doors and has a little figure, and the figure kind of predicts what's going to happen that day. So it's a little bit of like a fortune teller.
Like, what can a figure actually predict, though?
Well, I watched the movie, so I don't want to give too much away since we're not recording that episode tonight. You just have to watch it, and then we can talk about it next week.
I'm just trying to imagine how a figure from a magical advent calendar would somehow predict how my day is going to go. I'm not even going to ask. I'm just going to watch. I guess I just need to experience
it. Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah, so that will be our next episode. Yeah, you can watch it on Netflix.
Any thoughts from Batman of last
week? Okay, listen. So I do all the editing, and I have been working my way through because it's a bit longer than normal. And usually what I do, for anyone listening, I write down quotes, and I pass them to Ward, and Ward makes those awesome memes that you can find on our Instagram and Twitter. There are so many rants that you went on, Ward, that I had to just stop writing down.
Really? Really?
I had to just stop. I was like, you know what? We get the point. You hated the movie. There's a lot of quotes. We're just going to move on.
Well, the only, I guess, continuing issue I have is you telling me who can and can't be my Batman.
I'm
very presumptuous of you.
I am holding to my point that the Batman you have to claim is the one that was given to us on a silver platter. The one that was meant for our generation. Michael Keaton. I'll say this again for the 100th time. Michael Keaton is
It doesn't need to be repeated. I know your point.
It's not your Batman.
My counterpoint is this. If I extend that logic to anything else.
Sure.
You're telling me I can't like The Godfather because the movie was made before
I was
born.
No, you can like it. You can't claim it as your mafia movie. That's not our mafia movie.
I agree with that because it was made before I was born. Batman, on the other hand, not made in the 70s.
Well, no.
Made squarely when I was alive and thriving. Potentially the peak of my life.
The people who make the movies have a certain demographic in mind. So,
me?
No, you were too young.
They did not make breakfast cereal for adults. They made that breakfast cereal for me. The box told me
so. Listen, you are way off base. You are not going to win this argument.
I am not. I will not give up this argument.
I'm telling you,
Michael Keaton is
my
Batman.
No, you're lying. You can wish it all you want, but you're stuck with Val Kilmer and George Clooney like the rest of us, late millennials.
The first Batman I ever saw, Michael Keaton.
Me too, but he's not
our Batman. The first
Batman
I fell in love with, Michael Keaton. He is my Batman.
You can't claim him. It's not fair. It's not fair to the people older than us. It's not fair. We're stuck with the bad ones.
The people older than us have Adam West.
Yeah, well, that's true. They do. They get
Adam West, not my Batman.
Okay, we're going to have to put a pin in it. We're going to have to move on.
Until next week.
All right. Harry, what did you see this week? What you got going on?
I saw a few things. You want me to just jump right into it? Or do you want an overview?
And I'll do an overview, and then we'll go back and forth.
Okay. I watched the first two episodes, season two of Room 104.
Oh, I didn't know that was a season
Your
two.
Name.
Oh, because I don't have HBO.
It just came out. That could be it, too. Your Name, which I did not realize this was an animated movie, kind of an anime thing. It was. Surprise to me. Very good movie. Eighth Grade by YouTuber Bo Burnham, which was a complete surprise because he's a YouTuber.
That sounds terrible.
Just wait till I talk about it. Lady Macbeth, which was a heck of a trip. The Other Side of the Wind, that was the lost Orson Welles movie that Netflix paid
what
lots of money to recreate.
Did you do this week?
Now watch They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, the documentary that ties into the Orson Welles movie, The Other Side of the Wind. The Outlaw King, the Netflix original. And then I've started House of Cards Season 6. Boy, that is a chore. That is a job. That is not fun watching. That is work.
Wow. I don't know what to say about that list. I don't know.
There's nothing to say. That's what I watched.
Right. Well, I watched Homecoming. I watched Designated Survivor. I watched Skyscraper. Deck the Halls and How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Sold Christmas. That's what I wrote in my notes. Stole. STOLE. Not SOLD. Which would have been a really good movie. So I'm starting to get...
Wait, so which one is it? Is it Stole Christmas or Sold Christmas?
Stole Christmas. I'm starting to get into my Christmas movies. Which, again, we're recording it on the 12th, and there's already Christmas movies all over the place.
I mean, Christmas decorations were being sold before Halloween happened.
I know, it was so sad. I went in the week of Halloween to get some decorations, and they had one aisle in the rest of the store, and Michael's was all Christmas. So sad. All right. So I actually watched the first part of the first episode of House of Cards as well, the new season. But instead of watching it, I definitely just looked up what happened, and now I know the whole season. I would advise you to do the same.
I feel like that's the way I'm going, because I watched the first two episodes, I stopped, I thought, this is nonsense, I don't even know what's happening, and I don't care what's happening. But then I was working in my shop, and I thought, well, you know, I'll just let it play while I'm working, that way it doesn't really affect me. And even then, it's like, what is going on with this? Like, I get what's happening, I get what they're saying, I get what they're going for, but there's just something missing. Maybe it's Kevin Spacey. There's a lot of weird things going on with this show, and the fact is, the show crested the hill and has been going downhill for quite a while, and at this point, I think they're just wrapping up. I feel obligated to watch this season, because I've watched all the other seasons, which is not a good place to be when you just feel obligated to watch a season for no good reason.
I felt that same way, too, and then I started watching the first episode, and I was like, you know what, I think it's time to end this, and then I just read how it ended, how the whole season ended, and I'm glad I didn't invest too much into it. So I would advise doing the same.
Where did you go to read the season? Did you find a good spot?
I just Googled it. They put all the spoilers out there, and I was like, perfect. All
right, I may go that direction.
Yeah. All right, well, let's see. Man, what's this eighth grade thing? What is that? Well,
I'm glad you asked about that, because I'd prefer to talk about Room 104 first. So, great segue.
Okay. First of all, I do love that show. We had like HBO for a week, one of those free trials, and I watched every single episode of season one. I thought it was awesome.
I thought season one started off slow.
Oh, no.
Season two, two episodes are out. Yeah, the second episode was very similar to the first episode. They should have changed the order. That would have helped a lot. I think it's around the fourth or fifth episode where I thought, wow, this show's really taken off. So the first episode, it starts, it's a pretty good episode to start with. It's a little... I don't want to say benign, but it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, this is a story I feel like I've seen before. But they do create some nice tension because there's, okay, I think this is going this place. This is dark. Oh, maybe it's not. Maybe I misread it. Maybe it is. There's a lot of back and forth. That's nice. The second episode of the second season, easily the best episode of this show. It is absolutely bonkers. And towards the end, there is what I thought this was, where I thought this was going. But I was kind of hoping it would do something a little bit different that I thought, well, they won't do this. It's too wacky. And it's bonkers. Easily the best episode of the season.
Which do you like better? Do you like that show or Black Mirror better? Because they're in the same sort of weird, freaky vibe.
Well, they're both anthologies. I mean, Black Mirror, I love how Black Mirror, they present this alternate reality, this alternate world of how things could be if technology was different. Black Mirror, easily I like more. Black Mirror is just on a whole other level. It just goes so deep that you can debate about what would the world be like if this happened.
And this is probably more Twilight Zone-y, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is good. I really do enjoy it.
Well, as far as anthologies seem to be very popular. And I like the simple hook that, hey, this is just one hotel room, Room 104, what happens there. Because the Romanoffs, the Amazon show, I've watched, I think I'm like maybe an episode or two behind on that. Like, that's a neat show, but it's almost too highbrow, like trying to be too fancy with, oh, the Romanoffs and this lineage. Room 104 is very simple. It's to the point. One room, and it plays to its strengths. And again, this episode, I think it's Mr. Mulvihill. Incredible episode. Like, I'm working on NaNoWriMo. I'm working on a script. I'm going to have to go back and watch this episode to give me pointers, because it is an education.
The first season, the ones that I remember the most were episode one, The one where it was like a weird cult thing. There was like a guy who came into a room and there was a woman who desperately needed some sort of guidance. And he had like a video and it was very cult-like. And then the other one was sort of a tip of the hat to the politics of today. And if you could go back and take out one person to save a million, would you do it? So those are the ones that really stuck with me. But the first one really stuck with me. I'm kind of surprised that you say that it started off so slow, because that one was really good, where she's babysitting and then she thinks that the kid is making up an imaginary friend. I like that episode.
Okay, well, I'll take that back. It's not so much that it started out slow, but the second episode felt like a retread of the first. Yeah. And that just seemed like, is this what we're going to... When I watched, I thought, is this what we're going to get? It's just going to be variations on this one theme. I just didn't think it presented the show in the best light, doing those two episodes back to back. Switch that. I mean, the first episode alone is not bad, but it didn't make me think, oh, this show is going to be great. And then the second episode being a retread, I thought, man, this is just going to be same old, same
got
old.
Got it.
I really liked the episode that really turned the show around and thought, oh man, I'm in for this show, is I think it might be episode 5. It's the woman who's the cleaning lady, who used to be a dancer, and I don't think there's any dialogue the entire episode. Like, I love episodes that take a risk like that.
I don't
that.
Think I remember that one. Didn't even make an impression.
That was a similar moment.
Interesting.
Now, the political one, I think that was, it's the kid from Atypical.
Yes, it is.
Keira Gilchrist. That was a cool episode, too.
Yeah.
And then there's the one with the two women fighters. I thought that was just, not necessarily a great episode, but a neat concept.
Yeah. There were some that I didn't like the one where it was the guy, and it was back in the 90s, and he had written a screenplay, and his mom accidentally deleted it.
Oh, that was a cool episode.
That was cheesy.
Oh, man.
You know which one?
Oh, yeah. It's a little cheesy, but I thought, like, the way they executed it, like, it was really, that was a good one. I can't believe you don't like
that. I put
it
at the bottom. The one I did like was the one where I think Anne from Arrested Development was in it. At least in my head she was. And there's a woman.
Who from Arrested Development?
Anne from Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah, Anne. Okay. I keep forgetting she's just.
Exactly. There we go. I don't know. That's in my head she's in it. But the woman has, like, she's getting a second chance, and, I mean, I don't want to, like, give it away, but that's all I can really remember. Something happened, like, she has to go back to her family or go back to her husband, and Anne is there, and she's giving her this second chance for a new life, and it's up to her to take it, and...
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, that was a good one. I'm not doing a great job of explaining it, but that was a good one. Yeah, so I agree. That's a great show. Good pick. Good thing to be watching. I wish I had another free week trial so that I can watch it again. We'll see.
They give those out every
time. I know
so
they
often,
do. I
so
keep my eye out for them so I can do it. All right. It's my turn. Okay. I'm going to talk about Homecoming on Amazon Prime because it was really, really good. Have you watched it?
I pulled it up to read the synopsis. I think you mentioned it last time.
Yeah.
I've heard about it. It definitely looked interesting. I'm not going to say that. It looks interesting. That's all
so
I'll say.
So Sam Esmail is the director, and he does Mr. Robot. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Now I get... Okay. I didn't know that was his show,
yeah.
But I've heard his name a lot, so now it all comes together. Oh, yeah. I really liked the first season of Mr. Robot.
It was good.
The second season, I just couldn't get through
it. Listen, I think all seasons are really awesome, and this is their last season of Mr. Robot, so if you're invested in the show... I think it's good that they're going to finally end it before it gets kind of spiraled out. But I love that show. I love him as a director. He just is so incredible at shooting these scenes and following the characters around. And the music is so pivotal and incredible to the cast. So I loved it for that. But it was also just a really weird, kind of tumbling down the rabbit hole type of a show. You have Julia Roberts, who plays a counselor at Homecoming, which is an organization that welcomes soldiers back after they've been deployed. And it's supposed to be helping them acclimate back into society, but we learn this whole menacing backstory to it. And the guy, his first name is Bobby, and I don't know his last name. He's an actor, but he's like the really tall one in Mr. Robot, and he's really... Oh my gosh. He played in Boardwalk Empire, and I saw him completely naked.
Bobby Cannavale.
Every time I see him on screen, I just think of that scene in Boardwalk Empire where he was with his prostitute, and then people come in with guns. And he just ends up covered in blood, head to toe, naked. That's all I see when I see that man, is him naked, covered in blood.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a little column A, a little column B. So Yes, but I would definitely recommend, if you have Amazon Prime, to check that one out. It was, we binge watched it. It was so good.
Well, I'm definitely interested. I mean, I looked it up a couple times, so I'm going to have to check that
out. Okay, well, now can I ask you about eighth grade? Are you ready to talk about it? Are you...
I am ready. Well, you seemed a bit dismissive of eighth
grade.
Because
it sounds awful.
Could you elaborate?
Because it was from a YouTuber and whatever. It just, the way you presented it, I was rolling my eyes. So, go ahead.
I mean, really, you should, based on, I mean, the fact that Bo Burnham, he would do little, not necessarily comedy skits, what was it? Like, musical, comedic things. So, when I saw he was directing this, I thought, oh, he wrote it too. All right, that's something I don't need to see. But it's actually, it's really amazing how good it is. Like, based on his pedigree, it really, it's about a girl in the eighth grade, and it gets into a little bit of social media and how she presents herself on social media and how she is in real life. And I'm not going to say this is a great movie everybody should see, but it is very effective at capturing these ephemeral moments, and like when you're in eighth grade and you're just unsure of yourself and you're unsure of the world and how you fit in and how you relate to people and you want to be liked by people. Like, it captures those moments. Not just for girls or boys, but for everybody. It transcends gender, and it's great at that. Mm. It's a neat movie. Mm. I would recommend it, because it is. It's a good movie. And it's all the more impressive that Bo Burnham did it, because I just never would have expected him to do that. You have all these people that have been in Hollywood that have directed movies that have all the experience and the pedigree that they should make good movies, and they don't. And the fact that Bo Burnham is a comedy YouTuber and does this, I don't know. I just had to think, this has to be autobiographical. He has been pulling from his life now. He's felt, because you can't get something this real feeling by making it.
Maybe so. I don't know. I mean, I know YouTubers, they're valid. They do great things. And I don't know. When you said that it was from a YouTuber, my first reaction was a bit of a gag reaction. And this is, you know, so I don't know. I think that YouTubers have a big hurdle to overcome to jump into legitimate film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you would never expect somebody YouTube famous to be able to do something like this. And there was some YouTuber, I can't remember who, I can't even remember if the movie is a comedy or not, but he made a movie with a bunch of other YouTubers, and that movie was garbage. Yeah. But this, Bo Burnham took a good route and not using any other YouTubers, as far as I saw, and he made a legitimately good movie.
Well, good for him.
Like, the fact that it's not a train wreck is like a plus for this. Sure. Because it really, on paper, it shouldn't work.
Well, I mean, that's good. Good for him. He broke into real movies. Good for him. I've never heard of him before, but more power to him.
He even has a Netflix special where he sings songs and makes jokes.
Ooh, all right. Well, that sounds pretty legitimate to me. Great.
All right. So, I fast-forwarded through Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland. I watched the first season, but after that, I just had to fast-forward. It was a long season. He is the Designated Survivor, meaning that when they have their big, State of the Union in the government, they designate one person to go into, like, the bomb shelter, and just in case that anything happens to all the politicians, that survivor will be the one to run the country. And so that's what happens. So that's the setup to it. And then he's this really calm, chill guy, and he ends up being president. Blah, blah, blah. So they...
Isn't he part of a gang?
A gang?
Yeah, they call themselves the Lost Boys, right?
All right. You feel good about that one?
I do.
Okay. I'll leave it in then.
I like it.
I think he did a great job. He did so, obviously, from 24. He knows how to play this.
Where did you see this show?
It is on Netflix. You can fast forward through it, too.
I have a question. I know you said you watch some shows. Some shows you fast forward through. Some shows you skip. Can we talk about the dividing line? I mean, what happens for the... You know what? This show, I want to see it, but not enough to actually watch it. I just want to fast forward through it and watch the scenes instead of actually hearing anybody talk. Explain, like, how do you get to that point?
Look,
what decides that for you?
I mean, you talked a little bit about, like, how shows can be boring and you have them on in the background. Well, instead of wasting your time watching that or even having on all of that audio, just fast forward through the boring scenes. I mean, you could see at the bottom what the scenes are. So, like, in this one where he was, like, addressing a whole crowd of people, I don't need to hear him addressing a whole crowd of people. Let me just fast forward to where that really hot guy is talking to the female about their relationship. I want that storyline. And then you just sort of pop in and out every now and then as you fast forward through larger chunks. So, like, if you're doing, like, a 10-minute, 15-minute skip, you want to pop in for, like, 30 seconds every now and then. You get the gist of what's going on. And then before you know it, the episode's done. And you pretty much have the idea. And you're good.
I've got a follow-up. It's two parts of one question. What would Designated Survivor have to do to make you actually watch it? And what would I have to do to actually make you just completely give up and stop watching it?
You know, they started off really good because they were trying to find the terrorists who actually caused the bombing. So I was all in.
Did he have 24 hours to do it?
Okay. No. So I was all in. But then he started doing basic presidential stuff, like talking about healthcare and all this sort of reform. And I'm like, ugh, that's boring. Nobody cares. Fast forward. So if they keep the tension high, I'm all in. When it starts getting very mundane, you know I'm going to skip through that stuff. I just don't have time. I don't have time for that.
So what would have to happen for you to completely give it up and not even
continue? First, if they get rid of the really hot guy, I would stop watching.
Is that Lorenzo Lamas?
No. No? Oh, I don't know his name, but I think anyone who watches the show would know who I'm talking about.
Danny DeVito?
Yep. Danny DeVito lathered up, coming out of a couch naked. That's how I like my Danny DeVito.
I like that you go to that scene.
That's the only thing that I can see of Danny DeVito is from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the Christmas episode. We watch that scene, my husband and I, over and over again because it's so funny. Anyways.
Do you know what the first episode of Always Sunny I saw was? Is the one, I don't know what they call it. I'm just going to call it the magic turd, where a turd appears and they're trying to figure out where it came from. I'm not sure that's the best episode to watch to start with. But at the same time, if you can get through that one, like all the rest of them are better because of that. So there's plus and minus.
I actually stopped watching it this season because every single one that I've seen so far is somewhat political. It's like women need to have more rights or, I don't know, everyone has like a sort of a nod towards something political that's going on right now in society. And I do not watch that show to get politics. Like, I watch that show to escape from politics. So I had to give it up, unfortunately.
I'd be curious to see how they employ that because it just doesn't seem like that's viable for that kind of show. I'd be curious to know how they deploy.
Well, you know how in the show Mac is religious? So sometimes they'll do stuff where they kind of are satirical about people who are super religious and make fun of it and things like that. So they...
Aren't they satirical about everything?
Well, yeah, but more so, like, over the top. And that's what they've been doing lately with everything that's going on in the world. And again, I get enough of that. I don't want to sit and watch my sitcoms and have that blasted in my face. So... And that's also part of the reason I was skipping through Designated Survivor, because I just didn't really feel like some of the political stuff. I was more interested in some of the subplots.
I mean, it's a political show. I feel like you should have seen that one going in.
Yes, but I didn't want to get drowned in the policies. Like, when they start building their cabinet and talking to, like...
Oh, wow. They get into policy? Yeah. I see that.
I mean, I skipped through a whole episode where there was a character that I just saw on the bottom of my screen getting fast-forwarded by. I don't know who he was. I don't know what he was doing. I never paused on a scene where he was in it. I was totally fine by the end of the episode. I never needed to know who he was. So I think I've got my system down.
Apparently. Okay. Did you ever watch 24? No. I came to it late. So like I was not there like when it was live, which I'm sure would have made it better. It is not a show to be binged. I probably watched it, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And the first, these are back when network TV seasons were 22, 24 episodes. I mean, they were long. That one probably was 24 episodes because each episode was an hour. So like, I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, wow, this show is so exciting. It's crazy. There's terrorists. There's kidnappings. There's everything. So then we resolve that kidnapping plot. In the next episode, his daughter gets kidnapped again. I'm thinking, this seems a bit rote to kidnap her again. We just solved this problem. When she got kidnapped the third time in the first season, I just thought that was done.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it would work better if I was watching week to week, but binging it and the daughter's getting kidnapped that many times in one season, is that all we can come up with? Can't we at least kidnap somebody else for a change? I mean, that poor girl. But
you know what else?
Yeah, that's my 24 experience.
In Designated Survivor, they do kill a child. And that was also another turning point where I was like, nope, done, fast forward. Because there was no reason to kill the child, and they killed the child. It's a little trigger warning there. Nobody wants to see that.
Well, there had to be some reason. What was the
reason? You know, they were blackmailing an FBI agent, and he was complying. Totally fine. And they killed the kid anyways. I think it was just...
Like his kid? Or a random kid?
Yeah. Oh, so it was just a pure evil motivation. So, yeah. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. All right. And on that note, what else do you got?
Your Name. This is... I believe it's a Japanese film. I didn't know it was animated. It is animated. And especially these two high schoolers, they're somehow linked to where they switch bodies. And at first, they don't understand what's going on. And
well, that's been done a hundred times.
It has. And that's part of the problem I had with this. but it was supposed to be good. And I don't know, I guess part of it is animated, so it allows them to craft the scenes. This has been done a lot. This may do it better than anything else. It's really neat, like the way we reach the climax and how this works and the result. And there's a lot going on. I don't want to say anything because I don't want to give it away. But I think it's just something about being animated. It works really well. And I was really impressed with it. Actually, I would recommend it. It's a very good movie. And I think if you made this live action, I don't think it would work as well. But yeah, they really utilize it.
You know why I'll never see that movie?
Because it's Japanese?
No. Because it's animated. Because it's animated. I don't like animated stuff. We've talked about that with BoJack.
Yeah, but see, the animation works for this. I think if it was, like, all I could think was, there's some movie with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, not Speed. I think it was The Lake House. Yeah. My recollection is that's a bad movie. I don't really know.
It's a bad movie.
But I feel like if somebody tried to make this live action, that's what this would be. But the fact it's animated, I don't know. They do it really well. I don't know what makes this good. It's really good. Well, like, if you watched The Lake House and you're like, man, I wish there was a good version of this existed that was really good, that would be your name. That is a really good version.
That's a weird comparison.
No, it's completely apt comparison.
Okay. All right, well, listen, I saw Skyscraper with The Rock. Have you seen this movie?
No, but I've seen Die Hard.
Okay, it's not like Die Hard. They tried so hard to bill it like Die Hard. It's not like Die Hard. But it is the worst movie I've seen in a while, and I was laughing so hard in inappropriate moments because it's so ridiculous. Ward, there's a moment when The Rock puts duct tape on his hands and his shoes so the sticky part is facing out, and then uses...
No, I hope what you're saying, I hope what I think you're going to say does not come out of your mouth.
And then he...
This can't
be
true.
Climbs out of a window on the top of that skyscraper and uses it as, like, suction cups to get to a giant turbine engine that's, like, 20 feet away. Did you know that duct tape can hold the weight of The Rock onto the side?
I knew you were
going to
say that, and I was hoping you weren't going to say that.
That's, like, 96 stories high.
The Rock weighs something like 500 pounds. I can't even get duct tape to hold up a sheet of paper onto my wall. But apparently I'm not using
the right duct tape. He uses duct tape so many times in this movie that I feel like duct tape funded this movie. Because he is like closing up wounds with duct tape and just suctioning himself. And oh my gosh, it's just the best. There's a scene, he has a fake leg in this movie.
Oh, that was like big in the trailers.
Oh, yeah. They have a scene where he is hanging out of a building. The rope is attached to his fake leg, and it's attached inside the building. So it's the only thing keeping him from dying. And he ends up falling, like his leg detaches, but he grabs his leg.
Oh, you know, you're selling that scene short because they show it in the trailer. He's hanging that leg. You hear it kind of go click because it's about to unclick. I mean, they drive up the tension.
Course.
It's intense. Like in the trailer, like, ooh, that's going to be a stupid scene in the movie, but it's pretty cool now.
But then he grabs the leg. He climbs up his fake prosthetic leg to safety and gets inside the skyscraper. It is amazing. I loved it and I hated it. And it was just such a wild ride. I don't even know what to say. I feel like if you want to see a bad movie and make fun of a movie, you should definitely go see that one. Yeah. But wait till it comes out on Netflix when it's free. I wouldn't pay the $5.99 to watch it ever again.
$5.99, that's so
much. I know, it is. It is.
A quick question. The duct tape, did he have like a little belt holster with duct tape? Like, where was he getting all this duct tape?
That's a good question because it literally did just appear when he needed it. So I guess he had it in his pockets, like a giant roll of duct tape. Because every time he needed something, he was just like, oh, gotta get my duct tape. And he would make little jokes about it, like, oh, well, I'm glad I have duct tape. You can use it for anything. And then he would wrap a bullet wound to stop the bleeding. Oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Everything you've said other than the price makes me want to see this movie more. Like every time you're like, oh, he did this with the duct tape, I'm like, I want to see this.
Yes.
The magic duct tape.
Oh my gosh, it's fantastic from start to finish. Just, it also feels really long. I think it's only like an hour and 40 minutes, but it felt really, really long. And there were so many stupid parts. Oh my gosh. Okay. I don't want to give too much
away. Seems like this might be a future episode
for
the podcast.
Oh, we would talk for quite some time about this one. Okay. What else you got?
Lady Macbeth.
Ugh, I don't like period pieces.
Mama, what do you like?
Skyscrapers.
Apparently you only like things with duct tape, The Rock, and skyscrapers.
Are there any naked guys in it? Any naked butts? Because really...
In Lady Macbeth, yes. There's, I believe there's... Yeah, there's a couple naked butts. Ooh. Equal opportunity, naked butts. This movie's just a trip. It starts out, you have this young woman married to a much older man. Loveless marriage. Nobody's happy. I wasn't sure where this was going to go. We quickly realized just how kind of manipulative and dastardly she is. And it's just, it keeps, like, thinking, man, she's cold. She is cold-hearted. And then, like, oh, wow, I thought she was cold. She's really cold. It just keeps upping the ante to where you're like, wow, this person, she's kind of a psychopath.
Yeah.
And it just keeps going forward and upward and crazy until it ends. And it ends, I thought, did she plan all this? Or did she just luck out on good fortune? A little bit of both, I think. I don't know. It's a neat movie. I mean, I wouldn't say run out and go see it like you have to see it. But if you're looking for something to watch and this is on, you should check it out. It's pretty interesting. Like, it's certainly well done. Mm,
but it's like a period piece. So
certainly.
I...
But it's not as obnoxious as some period pieces. Like, because the thing is, with the way this movie works, it doesn't really work if it's not a period piece. Because you just, there'd be no reason for an arranged marriage like that. Well, I guess in other cultures, sure. But in general... The arranged marriage thing doesn't really work if it's not a period piece, because most people just can't comprehend, well, why would you do that? The whole, like, you couldn't do this if it wasn't a period piece. There's so many things that hinge on the fact that it's a period piece. Her relationship with people and workers and everything, like this classism thing going on. Yeah, that's a weird complaint that you don't like period pieces. Very strange.
I have never really liked period pieces. I can't even think of one that I've enjoyed. I don't like reading books that are from that time. Like, I'm not a Pride and Prejudice person. I never got into it. It's just not my genre.
But it's like, it's just history, man. Do you not like history?
There you go, right there. I'm not a history buff. It's never been my subject. I've never really, you know, felt connected to it. I don't know. I just, you know, it's the past. The past is the past. Let's move on, people. Unless it's the Black Plague. That I would watch. If it was something like the Plague or... Ooh, you know what? There was a show on Showtime a while back that had Clive Owens, and he was a doctor. It was set in the 1800s, and it was him trying to figure out medicine, and that was really cool. Because he was, like, cutting people open, and back in the day when medicine was so, like, you're gonna die, you know? That stuff is really awesome. But, like, the romantic period of literature and movies and stuff, I'm not really interested.
Romance is, I would say romance is, like, there's a period piece, and there's a period piece that's romantic. I'm not big on romantic movies anyway.
Oh, well, then you're not gonna like the holiday calendar, because romance is in the air.
Is it a period piece?
It might be better if it was. I can't wait
to
talk about it.
Period, circa 2015.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So have you watched many, you said you really like the Plague movies. Have you watched many Plague movies?
I have seen some where that's the setting, when it's really despair and dark. For some, I mean, it really shouldn't surprise you that that's interesting to me since I write dark fiction. Or, like, how they handled mental illness, asylum movies, or, you know, stuff back in the day, medicine back in the day. That fascinates me. But, like, this Lady Macbeth, you know, Shakespearean stuff, when it's just normal people doing betrayal and things like that, I don't know. I mean, that doesn't thrill me, even with the naked butts.
So, and if it was present day, though, you'd like it more? Is that what you're
Absolutely.
Trying to say?
Absolutely. Yeah, present day. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know how you do Lady Macbeth present day. There's a lot of things you'd have to switch and change, and that would be that'd be quite the obstacle.
Do you remember when they did Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes?
Yeah, like this weird pseudo alternate reality.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you do it.
It's almost nonsensical, though.
Yeah, well, they've done.
I mean, you would take some made up nonsense world over something
listen,
that actually
like
happens.
10 Things I Hate About You was a playoff of one of Shakespeare's
Taming of the Shrew.
So there are ways to modernize roles and stories from back in the day, you know?
Well, I mean, that's one of the things about Shakespeare is that his stories were very broad that you could adapt them. And with Lady Macbeth specifically, there's just a lot of things that hinge upon the way society worked at that time period. That, yeah, you could change them and make them more modern, but you're robbing the story of a lot of its backbone because you'd have to change things so drastically to make it work and not seem hacky.
Did anybody have leeches on them as a medical cure? Anybody have to get bleached?
We didn't really delve into the
medical
thing.
No, that's not fascinating to me. I have very specific tastes. when it comes to the 1800s. Apparently. So
I'd ask a follow-up question, but I don't want to answer.
That's probably best. All right, moving along. Oh, and then I watched some Christmas movies. You've seen Deck the Halls, right? With Matthew Broderick.
Who's in, is that?
And Danny DeVito.
I don't know.
Yeah, they put all the lights up on the house, and they're like fighting back and forth, their neighbors, and...
That sounds familiar. I don't know if I've actually seen it, though, but I know what you're talking about. If I haven't seen it, I've at least heard about the movie or seen something about it.
So this is one of the ones that I wanted us to do, but we just don't have enough time, and we already picked our movies.
You make time for the things like this.
But, you know, these are Christmas movies that I watch every single year, despite the fact that they're terrible, and they make me happy. I don't care that they're not super good plots and that they're corny and cheesy. They're just fun movies. But how did this get made? I'm going to plug an entirely different podcast. But they did this one, and I learned so much about it, about how, like, Danny DeVito and Matthew Broderick did not want to be there, how Matthew Broderick would always be in such a bad mood, how, like, they would fly in for one day, shoot as much as possible, and then fly out because they were just so despondent because they just hated it so much. But I just feel like it brings joy. It's on every single year, so they got to be making a good amount of money off of it. Like, I don't understand why some of these actors are so, like, looking down their nose upon movies like this. And we'll kind of talk about this when we talk about the holiday calendar, too, I'm sure. But because it's like, you know, you're making a movie, it's going to be a holiday movie, it's stuck in that genre, so you have to follow certain rules. So just embrace it. Enjoy it. Don't be snobby or rude or whatever. Just embrace it. It's going to bring a lot of people happiness over the holiday season. So, and it did for me.
As a follow-up, I don't think I've seen this movie.
Really? It's on all the time. All the time.
But on where? I don't have...
Oh, you don't have, like...
cable or satellite or anything. I've got Netflix. I've got HBO. That's all I've got.
It might be on Netflix sometime. You might have to check.
Well, I'm probably only going to watch this if we're going to review it on the show.
Well,
maybe
can,
next year
when
we do Christmas in July.
There you go.
You know, that'd be a great little, thing
fun
to do.
Yes.
But I actually have a website I go to, iCheckMovies.com, where you can just create a list of all the movies you've seen. So I often go there when I'm like, have I seen that movie? And this site is telling me that I've not checked it, and thus I've not seen the movie.
Okay. Well, it's a fun holiday one. It'll be fun for kids, you know.
You just said how horrible the movie was. Everybody hated
it. Everybody hated it, but I enjoyed it. I've been saying that I like it. It's a good Christmas movie. It's a feel-good movie. It's clean.
Is it a kids movie? Is it clean for kids?
Yeah,
I don't see Danny DeVito and think, oh, there's a guy that his movie's going to be good for kids.
Clean.
The man was birthed from a couch. That's just not good for kids.
No, it's clean. I actually watched it by myself at home when I was sick.
How many turds are in this movie?
No, it was fine. It's fine. It's fine. But
Is it before he went to this lecherous path he's on now?
He probably just wanted to do a fun, clean movie. Probably got paid a lot of money is what I'm guessing.
He just wanted to see what it felt like. Just tried it all for old time's
sake.
So
the woman that played Matthew Broderick's wife played Charlotte in Sex and the City, and she actually picked this movie out of a whole stack because she wanted to keep her good girl image. She was getting offers to play like a villain and sort of take it in that direction, but she chose this movie because she knew that people liked her as that wholesome character. So I thought that was a fun little tidbit.
Sure, yeah.
All right, what else?
The Other Side of the Wind. I mean, this is an Orson Welles movie. I mean, before I get into some of the history, I'm just going to say that this movie is very, very meta. The problem is the meta it's set in is the 70s. So much of like what makes this meta, I didn't get. I watched the documentary after this and it's like, oh, wow, there's so much cool things going on in this movie, but it's 30 years too late. Like, I wasn't even born when these jokes were made or were relevant. So watching it, the movie's bonkers. Like, I get it on the surface. It's about a director who's been ousted of Hollywood. He's trying to make it back in. He's doing this gimmicky movie to try and get back in Hollywood's good graces, which is exactly what Orson Welles was doing at the time. He was a director that was on the outs. He was trying to get back in. He was doing this meta movie. He died before it was finished. I mean, it was in legal trouble. He worked on it for years. He edited it for years. It's crazy. And Netflix bought it. They made it. It's just a very weird movie. So I watched the documentary, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, and that is a documentary about this very movie, and it goes into a lot of detail about the jokes they were trying to make. I mean, again, like I just don't know what was going on in the 70s, because I wasn't born then,
so
you know?
True.
So it's just like, so when they explain it to him, like, oh man, this thing is so meta that if it could have come out when he made it, man, like, I just imagine a movie like this being made now on the same level of meta, it'd be crazy and it'd be ingenious. And I don't know, a lot of Welles films weren't appreciated when they came out, and after some time, people were like, oh wow, you know, there really is some genius to this. But at the same time, I watch The Other Side of the Wind, I think this is the dude that made Citizen Kane? I mean, there's just, I don't know. Like, it's, to be nice, maybe it's like on a whole another level that I just don't get. But part of just thinks, you know, maybe he was being too gimmicky. I don't know. The documentary, though, is really cool. If you don't watch the movie, watch the documentary, because it's just very fascinating, like, things that were going on, like Orson Welles and his persona and how it's almost larger than life. The part I always remember about this documentary is the fact that he, one actor said, hey, yeah, you can crash with me for a few weeks as you're working on this. Welles lived with this guy for 3 months. The rule was, you do not disturb Orson Welles, and you make sure there are fudgesicles in the freezer. Yes. It's just, the whole thing is crazy. Like, everything that happened, like, the way Welles was kind of screwing with some of the actors, because a lot of it were directors playing characters, and, like, Peter Bogdanovich is in this, and at the time he was playing a director that was very much based on him. It's crazy. I didn't realize that, because I know Peter Bogdanovich for a few movies. I didn't realize he was playing himself in the movie when I watched it. So, really, watch the documentary first, and if you're still curious, watch the movie. I think I would have had a better time with it. But yeah, there's a lot going on. It's interesting.
You know, I've never seen Citizen Kane. I know. It's on my list, and I always mean to, and I never get around to it. I end up watching Skyscraper instead.
I will say the big problem with Citizen Kane is that when it came out, it had never been done before. That was, what, like in the 40s or 30s? So many movies have copied that. So many movies have tried to twist that formula that... The thing is, what made it revolutionary then, you've seen that already numerous times. So it just doesn't have the impact. So if you can try to watch it knowing that when this happened, nobody'd ever seen anything like this, or so many things were revolutionary completely, it helps. But if you're watching it, comparing it to movies, like modern movies, you're like, I don't get it. I don't see it. But when it came out, nobody had done that. Like the tension, the plotting, the twisting, it had never been done before.
I got to get on that and watch that. Yeah, haven't seen that one.
That's just one of those movies that if you like movies, you have to watch just for this.
I totally agree.
I mean, because when I'm in the street, people are always like, yo, man, you seen Citizen Kane? Like, yeah, I've seen Citizen Kane, dog. Like, all right.
It's probably one of the few popular movies that I have not seen. I think I'm pretty good on, like, you know, like I've seen The Godfather and I've seen Scarface and I, you know, but no, Citizen Kane is still on my list. Still haven't seen it.
The Wages of Fear. Have you seen that?
No, I don't think I have heard of it.
That is. I mean, the problem with a lot of older movies is that they just feel like older movies. Wages of Fear, I think it's the 40s. It's black and white, but it does not feel like an older movie. Like it, you could reshoot that scene for scene verbatim today, and it'd feel modern.
Good to know.
So that's my old school recommendation.
Oh, nice. Oh, please don't start like having an old school recommendation like segment. We don't need to do that.
I'm only going to do it if we fall into it naturally. Oh, we did great. Right here.
Okay. All right.
Completely natural.
You've seen How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey, right? Come on, Ward!
I mean, I probably have. Oh my God. Wait, let me consult my website.
You have a child! Don't you guys fill his Christmas time with whimsical movies to watch? How are you guys not watching
these? We watch the cartoon Grinch, the original Good Grinch.
Of course, that's really good. The Jim Carrey one is so bad, but I just end up watching it.
Yeah, why would I show my kid a movie that's so bad that you just described verbatim? So bad.
For me,
why would
they might enjoy that? It. It's geared toward kids. So
no, my kid has superior taste in all things entertainment.
Okay. Yeah, it's rough. Even when I was watching it again the other night, I was like, wow, this just never became what it could become. What a shame. But now they have that new Grinch movie out. It's like the baby Grinch. It's a little Grinch. That one looks pretty good.
I actually have seen this movie, but I just want to read a comment on the site. Awful film. Absolutely no redeeming features whatsoever.
I wouldn't go that far. I would say that the costumes were lovely. The scenery, they did a very nice job of creating Whoville. You know, the makeup, everything looked really great. The plot was terrible. Jim Carrey, I love Jim Carrey, but this was not his role. You know, I don't know who would have done well on this, but Jim Carrey did not do well on this. So, but you know, it's Christmas time. It's going to be on 500 times before the end of December. So I'll probably watch it again. That's how I roll in the Christmas season.
Watching terrible movies.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Die Hard.
Okay. All right.
Nah, I don't know. What's my favorite Christmas movie? I don't know. Growing up, I always watched It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas. Sure. So I enjoy those movies. I'm not sure they're good. It's just I've always watched them. You know, Home Alone, like that came along when I was a kid, and so that was always a big Christmas movie. I only like the first Home Alone. I don't like any of the Home Alones after that. I only like the second Home Alone. Second Home Alone is not better than the first. I just want to be absolutely clear on that, because I've gotten into debates on that before. I don't know, what other Christmas movies?
You know, BB Gun?
You know what? I'd never seen that until maybe 5 years ago. And you know what? Honestly, I don't see what the fuss
is. In fairness, I had never seen It's a Wonderful Life until about 5 years ago. And I had the same reaction. I was like, really? This is what this is? I was disappointed. I thought that the movie was going to be largely of him, like, with the angel and looking at what his life would be like without him in it. And that was really just towards the end. It was like the last little segment. So I was very disappointed.
Really? Because if somebody asked me what it's about, I would say that the large portion of it is him.
I didn't feel like it was a large portion of it. I felt like the vast majority was him complaining about his life and not being grateful. And then the last little tiny bit, like, got fast-forwarded through what his life would be like if he had never been around. And then epiphany.
Oh, yeah, but see, all that complaining is in Jimmy Stewart's voice, you know? It's like, it's cool because Jimmy Stewart's saying it. Maybe you just haven't heard enough of Jimmy Stewart.
Oh,
maybe that's why. Watch the movie 5 to 10 times.
I liked it. I've seen a lot of his movies, but no. I mean, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. But I just, after I watched it, I was like, really? This is everybody's favorite? I don't know. I like The Christmas Story. I've always watched, like, Frosty and Rudolph, those animated.
The claymation.
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Things.
So I grew up with those. I grew up with White Christmas and, you know, all of that stuff that you grew up with, too. So. Oh, but I think I've watched Elf. When Elf came out, that just changed Christmas for me altogether. It's one of my favorites now. I watch that even in the middle of the year. If I'm feeling blue, I put on Elf. I love that movie.
Yeah, a movie that I used to watch all the time as a kid. It is a Christmas movie that I'd like to watch now. I've never gotten around to it. Just going to be curious to see how it stacks up. But A Christmas Comes to Willow
never
Creek.
Never heard of it.
It starred, who are the Duke boys? Tom Wopat and whoever the other one is?
Okay.
I don't know. I have to imagine that it probably has not aged well from young child me to now. But yeah, really like that as a kid.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what any of that is, but okay. Sure.
I mean, the Duke boys, they're truck drivers. Come on, what more can you want? That
alone is such a boy thing. Ugh. No, thank you.
Truck
driving? Yeah, so, you know, when I was, you know, like a young lass, that would not have appealed to me at all. Like, Home Alone.
Maybe you just weren't exposed
to Home Alone
to that,
did not appeal to me the way it appealed to all my guy friends. And the fact, like, I didn't even realize it was a Christmas movie. Like, people classified it specifically as a Christmas movie until I became an adult and had a son. And then people were like, well, you gotta show him Home Alone on Christmas. And I was like, well, oh, I guess you're right. Like, it doesn't resonate.
Why would you think it's not a Christmas movie?
I wouldn't have classified. I just thought of it as a kid's movie.
What would you
just
classify it as? A romance?
Just a kid's movie.
A kid's movie.
Yeah, because I never connected with it, just being a girly girl back in the day. So, yeah. Any movie that had, like, a little boy wasn't really my thing. Until I was, a teenager and, like, Jonathan Brandis was super hot and things like that. But, like, as a child, just it...
What movies was he in?
Ladybug. He
that?
Was in that TV show.
Is Ladybugs Rodney Dangerfield?
Yeah, it is.
I don't think that's a good movie.
No, it isn't. But I saw it when I was a kid, and I liked Jonathan Brandis, and so I was in. All in.
What else was he in?
Was
he the kid that was in, what was that?
Yes.
That TV show, Sequest?
Yes. He talked to the dolphin. Yes.
Did you watch that show?
Yeah, I definitely did.
Was that show good?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it would be like now, but I was definitely... I could only watch, like, an hour of TV every night for a little bit, and so that would be my...
That was your
hour?
Yeah,
that was my hour. We got the TV guide, remember, when they, like, printed out, and it came with the newspaper, and you would, like, you know, actually see what was on TV, and so we would get our little highlighters, my sister got a different color than me, and we would highlight our hour that we got to watch, and that was mine.
Wow.
We're just going down memory lane.
Sequest. Yes.
It was good, it had a dolphin, a talking, well, not talking dolphin, but he could communicate it.
It communicated.
Yeah. It's great.
I don't yet. Yeah, that show always looked interesting, but for some reason I never got to see it. And I feel like I didn't miss much.
Oh, you missed much. You missed much.
It was cool because wasn't it like a group of people that lived underwater?
Yeah, it was like the Star Trek of the sea. Did you like Star Trek?
Oh, gosh.
Were you?
I like Star Trek. I don't think you're going to sell me on Star Trek of the sea.
That should have been the tagline. Star Trek of the sea. I think it would have gotten more viewers.
It probably would have helped.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Do you have anyone you want to finish off with?
The latest Netflix original, Outlaw King, starring Chris Pine and a whole pile of other people. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this released in theaters too. And usually if it releases in theaters too, Netflix considers it to be a legitimate movie. And it is a legitimate movie. Like, a lot of times I watch Netflix movies and I think, oh, this is a Netflix movie. You know, they got rejected from everybody else, so they found a home at Netflix. This is like, it feels like a legitimate movie. It's easy to compare it to Braveheart just because it takes place in the same setting. Like, right, like, this, the little title card in the beginning says, in essence says, yeah, after the events of Braveheart, this movie begins. So it's hard not to compare them, though they are very different movies. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't love this movie, but I will say, in Netflix's, you know, benefit, it felt like a legitimate movie, and Netflix needs more movies that feel like legitimate movies.
I do feel like Netflix is getting better, you know? They're becoming its actual little hub, more so than,
well, I mean,
I feel like when we first got Netflix. Well, I mean, I don't know. That might not be fair.
Oh, no, definitely, because they keep borrowing billions of dollars because they realize that they can't just take the rejects and make it. They have to buy big movies. I mean, they paid like, what, $100 million for Bright, the Will Smith movie? That's like a legitimate movie because
they
paid
for
a legitimate movie.
It's the most they've ever spent on a movie. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I like Bright. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best thing ever, but it felt like a real movie, and that's what Netflix needs. They need movies that feel real.
I agree.
I actually enjoyed Bright. I mean, yeah, there's some misses on that, and there's some things they could have done better. But I was going to say, if they come out with Bright 2, when they come out with Bright 2, they've already signed everybody up. It is in development. Oh, I'm definitely going to watch that day one.
I'll watch
Bright day one. I was so excited for that because they finally bought a legit movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Netflix has a Martin Scorsese movie coming out next year with De Niro and Pesci and I think somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah, Netflix, they realize they have to pony up for those movies they're doing.
All right, well, good for Netflix. All right.
And that's all I got. That is what
I
watched this
week. That's all I got, too. That wraps it up. Awesome. Where can people find you? What are you up to?
Those are two different questions. Where can they find me and what am I up to? You got to pick
one.
I'd say what I'm up to is the more interesting question if you want to be like, I have a garage that doubles as my shop. Last year, I decided to replace the lights, and I'm like, well, you know, would it be good to rearrange everything in the shop? So I came up, you know, I use Google SketchUp to draw everything, sketch it up. I'm finally enacting that. I'm taking as much stuff as I can out of my shop. I'm painting it. I'm upgrading the electrical, rearranging everything. Complete renovation. And it's very exciting, very time consuming.
Do you ever get creeped out being alone in your shop, like with all of your costumes kind of lying around, casting shadows?
I've never once been creeped out in my shop. No, I take that back. I have a couple times been creeped out just in that when I made my duct tape dummy and I had him sit in the middle of the room and like I'd come in and before I flipped on lights, like you'd see this figure in front of you. Got creeped out a couple times there.
Okay.
Those have been the only times. Like, I've never been creeped out any other
time. I think I might be a little creeped out if my little nook of the house was filled with weird costumes and foam weapons and just a bunch of stuff. That's how I imagine.
Well, my actual shop does not have costumes and weapons because my shop, I do woodworking too. It gets very dusty with sawdust in there, which is another thing I'm going to rectify in the new and improved shop. So all my costumes are in another part of the basement. All
right.
Yeah, I'll be installing dust collection because I've been rearranging, moving, cleaning up, going through, and there's just sawdust on everything. It is ridiculous. So I'm going to employ some dust collection to prevent that because it's a mess.
Fair enough.
But yeah, there will be fun pictures on Instagram soon of all my shop.
What's your Instagram
endeavors.
Account? Or where can they find you?
What a good question. That would be with
there
Woodworks.
Okay. You can find us at Box Office Refund on Twitter and Instagram, and we're going to have some fun stuff coming up in December, so please check us out. You can email us at boxofficerefund@gmail.com. You can find me at Nico Bell Fiction at Twitter and Instagram. All right, well.
And just to tag on to that, we have a website, boxofficerefund.com, and if you're like, hey, you watched Batman and Robin, I just want to get a sense of what that movie's like. There are all kinds of gifts on the website. There are little quotes we have. There's pictures. There's a lot of stuff just so you can get a feel for the movie of how bad it is, how ridiculous. And there are some good gifts that are going to be coming out for Batman and Robin.
Oh, boy. I can hardly wait. All right. So join us next week, the holiday calendar when we will have actually watched the movie by then. We'll have a nice,
I'll be prepared.
Nice debate. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
That's like my one mulligan. Yeah, I forgot that one. That's my one mulligan. Just kick it, restart
the
it.
One mulligan, and it's our first year. We haven't even made it a full year. I mean, okay.
I mean, do we want to start talking about your mulligans?
And
do we want to
get
into that? That's
right,
a big box.
Bye.
Box. Office. Refund. Box Office Refund Podcast.